My name is John Erling. Today's date is April 1st, 2010. Dick, if you will state your full name and your date of birth.
Well, my name is John Richard Schmitz, and I go by Dick Schmitz, and my date of birth is December of 1934. I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And your age today?
75.
We didn't pick this date, April 1st, April Fool's Day, because of you, but it just happened.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Where are we recording this interview?
The studios of our company, Irving Productions, here in Tulsa. We've been in business almost 45 years, and hopefully we'll make it another day.
What hospital were you born in?
I don't know, unless it was Mercy. That's the only name I can remember. There was a Mercy Hospital in Tulsa, but I don't know if that was the hospital that I was born in or not.
All right. Your mother's maiden name and where she was raised.
Her name is Juanita Alderson. She was born in Oklahoma in Indian Territory. I do know where, but I just can't remember. She grew up in Tulsa.
Your father's name?
Henry Schmitz. By the way, my mother graduated from Central High School in 1925. My dad graduated from Holy Family High School in 1925. He grew up here in Tulsa as well.
So the whole family has been Tulsa background.
There's a definite base here, yeah. And my grandparents lived here as well.
Your father, what did he do for a living?
He worked for the Texas Company, which is sort of a division of Texaco. He was in the pipeline division. He worked in the oil fields.
You had brothers and sisters?
I have two sisters, both younger than me. One is going to be 70 this year, next month, and the other one is 64.
What did your father do for a living?
Well, he worked as a gauger for the pipeline company. He would climb tank batteries, as they were known, and take samples of oil from the tanks to see what the quality was. He would measure it on different instruments that he carried up and down the tank. He would test the oil, and if it was quality oil, he would then go down to the bottom of the tank, open a valve, and send it through a pipeline to a refinery. If it wasn't of that quality, he'd pass the word on to the people that put it in the tank, and that was their problem.
And your mother was the homemaker?
Yep, that's it.
Your memories of the neighborhood here in Tulsa, do you have any?
Just very vaguely. We lived out on 5th Street near TU. The house is gone now. The street and the house are all part of the campus. I can remember my folks and friends of theirs that would come over and visit. Keep in mind, I was not more than 4 years old at the time, but they would come over and visit, and they would order Cokes to be delivered to the house at a nickel apiece. And so they would each order a Coke. So when they brought the Cokes, they cost them about a quarter, something like this, to get five Cokes delivered to the house sometime in the evening.
How old were you when you moved to Illinois?
I was probably about 4, give or take a few months.
Why was that move made to Illinois?
Well, my dad was working for Texas Company, which was, as I said, a division of Texaco. They transferred him up there to work in the oil fields up there as a gauger.
Where in Illinois were you living?
We moved to Salem, Illinois, which is about 60 miles east-southeast of St. Louis.
So your first elementary school was there?
Yes. For 8 years, I went to Schanefeld Grade School. We had no kindergarten at the grade school at that time. This was about 3 miles out in the country. Although there were a number of students in the school, practically all of them were related to somebody that was in the oil business because it was right near the center of the oil boom that was going on in the Salem area, which was referred to as the Centralia Field, but it was really the Salem part of that field. I went 8 years there, and then I went into town, into Salem, and went to high school, graduating in 1952.
Was this kind of tough on your family, your parents? Were there a lot of back and forth to Tulsa because they were really Tulsa people?
No, it really wasn't. They were glad to do something new, and it was a good job for my dad. Obviously, with the way the oil was booming at that time, it looked like a long-term solid relationship, and he stayed with Texaco the entire time before he retired.
While in the Salem Community High School, what were your activities? And talk to us about your experience there.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I was in the band, and the band during my senior year decided they wanted to do a variety show, and as a result, they had different students go out and do certain acts, and I somehow latched on to watching a fellow by the name of Victor Borga. I played a little piano and had a pretty good sense of humor, at least I thought I did, and other people said that. So I just did a total and complete imitation of Victor Borga's phonetic punctuation, and I even used a German accent. He was from Denmark, and he had an accent, which was not terribly unlike a German accent, but I used this accent to do this phonetic punctuation.
You remember some of that now?
Well, strangely enough, every 5 years in Salem, they have a all-school reunion. From year to year, it's like just a class reunion. But that all-school reunion is coming up in October of this year. And I got a call last week asking me if I would do the phonetic punctuation routine again, because people there still remember it. And this was back in 1952 that I did it. I sort of tried to beg off of the thing, but they just really got after me. And I'd done it once before at the very first reunion that they had for all school. That was back in 1990. So here's the latest version of that coming up, and there won't be another one for 5 years, and maybe they'll forget about it by then. But I finally agreed to do it. But you know what I think I'm going to do? I think I'm going to ask them who is one of the better, most adaptable students in the school. And I want to bring that student on stage with me, one of the current attendee at Salem Community High School, and ask them to read the piece that I read, which has all this punctuation in it, which Victor Borge wrote and originated, and it's all his. I probably could have been sued for this when I was doing it, and I may get sued anyway. But anyway, the point is, I'm thinking about having them come up and read it, and then I would fill in the punctuation with the sound effects and see how long he can go or she can go without coming apart, because it is a pretty funny piece, and it was written that way. And it's the kind of thing where I can't even do it here. There's a period. That's not a good one because I'm in the process of talking, but you got to be in the right mood to. That's a comma, you know. That's an exclamation mark. That's a question mark. So you put those things into this format that he wrote. Like the very first line is, "Through the open window, there suddenly came light. Poor Eleanor sat alone, dreaming of but one thing." Anyway, it went on from there. I won't go any further. I can't. I don't remember anymore. But I've got it written down someplace.
Well, Victor Borge was extremely funny, and yes, using the piano is his prop, I would
expect. And I had enough piano that I could do some funny things there, a little thing called a Mozart opera, which Borge also did. But not always did we have a piano, so most of the time I had to rely on just the reading itself.
Well, while in high school, you became interested in radio at that point? Is that happening?
Yeah, that was sort of an accident in a way. I was in a history class my junior year. There was a little local radio station out of Centralia. Salem didn't have a station at that time. And the local Centralia station had a program where they would go around to different schools throughout the whole southern Illinois area. They would put together a 15-minute program, and they would have the principal speak for about a minute. They would have the band play a couple of songs, maybe lead in, come out, and so forth. They would have some talented person that might play the piano or a clarinet or something, do a little solo. And they also would try to do something serious with regard to academics, and this happened to be a debate. So they picked two students from each of two history classes. And I wasn't particularly great in history, but I was one of the ones selected. They had two boys, two girls. Then they brought us out, and they had two on one side, two on the other, and they said, okay, we're going to have this little mock debate. Here's your question. Should Red China be admitted to the United Nations? I don't even remember what side I was on because I had no clue what they were talking about. Nonetheless, I read up on it a little bit. They even gave me the answers. I didn't really want to read it, so I tried to memorize it and then modify it a little bit. So when the guy that was conducting the debate said, now, how do you feel about this? Well, we're in favor of it, and the other side was against it. Each of them had been given one or two lines to read as specific reasoning for or against, and that's what I did. They put the program together, and they put it on the air, and then they broadcast it over the whole PA system in the school, probably a couple of weeks later. Then teachers and fellow students started saying, hey, good voice. You ought to think about going on the radio or something like that. I had never really thought about it. All along, I was thinking maybe I'd get into teaching or something. But as it turned out, I thought, well, that's sort of intriguing. That's sort of interesting. I sort of like that.
So you had no thoughts of radio prior to that time?
Not really, no. And I hadn't done my Victor Borge bit either on the variety show. I hadn't really stood up to do something like that until really the next year, my senior year. So all things just seemed to be flowing. Then I wanted to go to the University of Illinois, but I couldn't afford it. But I did get a chance to go to Southern Illinois University, and that was where I went to after I left high school.